This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. There's obviously no telling how far they're going to go, but for the first time in more than 100 years, serious conversations about monetary reparations for slavery are being had in this country. And that change, prompted mostly, it seems, by the murder of George Floyd and the reckoning we are still working our way through, has reached Congress. The House Judiciary Committee has approved a bill that would establish a commission to study the effects of slavery and of the racism that is systemic in this economy. That bill, which was first introduced, by the way, in 1989, still obviously has a long ways to go to become law. But reparations are being made at the local level. Marketplace's Amy Scott has our story from Baltimore.
You'd never know it just walking by. There's no plaque or marker. But the three-story red brick row house at 1834 McCullough Street was the site of a dark chapter in our country's history. In May 1910, a prominent black lawyer named George McMeckin moved his family into this house on what was then an all-white block in West Baltimore.
By his own account, the first night that he moved in here, he had rocks thrown through his windows, and the neighbors made it very difficult for him to live here.
That's Gray Maggiano, rector of nearby Memorial Episcopal Church. He says McMeckin had crossed an invisible line separating black and white Baltimore.
And this really set off a firestorm among white Baltimoreans as they tried to keep their neighborhoods free of what they termed the Negro invasion.
George McMeckin's white neighbors fought back by forming protective associations. One of them held its meetings at Memorial Episcopal, Maggiano's church.
And what that looked like, at least here, was assigning block captains to each block to watch out for either realtors or black families that might be looking around to buy homes, and then doing whatever they could inside and outside the law to stop them from doing so.
Including changing the law. In the parish hall at Memorial, Maggiano says white lawyers helped write what became the nation's first housing segregation ordinance. Passed by the city council in 1910, the law prohibited black people from moving to majority white blocks and vice versa. About 40 other cities, mostly in the South, followed suit.
That law became a model for segregation laws around the country until it was overturned by the Supreme Court.
That happened in 1917, but the church's efforts to enforce segregation in its congregation and the community would continue through the 1960s and the civil rights movement. Maggiano didn't know that history when he first came here from Miami 5 years ago. By then, the church was known for its progressive stance on issues like women's ordination and LGBT rights. But he did wonder why his new congregation of about 100 people was almost entirely white, like himself, in a part of Baltimore that's now about 50% black. He started digging into the church archives. Then someone arrived whose own search for answers would change everything.
My name is Natalie Conway. I am a deacon in the Episcopal Church.
Conway, who's 73, grew up in segregated West Baltimore. She and her brother had been researching their genealogy. And not long after she was assigned to Memorial, they discovered that their ancestors had been enslaved by a Reverend Charles Ridgely Howard. One day, Conway was sitting in the church.
And I happened to look up, you can't see the plaques now because they're gone, and said, oh my goodness.
There, carved in marble, was Charles Ridgely Howard, founding rector of Memorial Episcopal Church.
I'm serving at a church where my ancestors were enslaved by the rector of this church. It was mind-boggling. It was surreal.
She nearly walked out.
I said, what am I doing here? I didn't feel comfortable staying here, and as we say, you got to pray on it. So I talked with Gray about it, and we said, well, we need to tell the story.
So they told the story to the congregation. And then came another shock. One morning before a service, one of the church's longtime members, Steve Howard, pulled Conway aside.
I just told her that I'm descended from those people.
Those people, as in the Howard family, who had enslaved Conway's great-great-grandmother. Howard had known about his connection to slaveholders, but when he heard Conway's story,
That's what made it real. It's like I punched myself in the gut because I realized that I had been ignoring history and that I had been lying to myself about the past and the consequences of slavery in our past.
Things got more real when Conway led a large group from the church to go see the plantation north of the city where her family had been enslaved. Together, she and Howard poured holy water on the ground, and the congregation began to talk seriously about reparations. It wasn't always easy, like when church leaders voted to take down the memorial plaques, but keep them in a garden out back. Maggiano says the church lost some members along the way.
People would say things to me like, when are you going to stop preaching about racism? You know, are you trying to make this a black church? Some people did leave. Some stayed and begrudgingly came along.
Some new members also joined. And earlier this year, Maggiano put the larger reparations plan to a vote over Zoom.
So I'm asking your support to affirm the vestry's decision to withdraw $50,000 from the vestry fund as an act of reparations and empower the vestry to direct those resources towards Black-led justice-centered work.
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Yes. Aye.
That first $50,000 is just a start. The plan is to raise and spend at least $500,000 over the next 5 years. An advisory committee of local black leaders will guide the investments in areas like education, voter engagement, and housing. We'll take a closer look at where the money is going next time. But Maggiano says reparations are about so much more than money.
The real success will be as if we have so changed the character of this church and the broader community that we become a model for other neighborhoods and other cities around the country.
Only this time, a model he hopes the church can still be proud of in another 100 years. In Baltimore, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.